Rise, please. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Idaho is now in session pursuant to law.
Thank you, everyone. Please be seated. Welcome all of you to the Idaho Supreme Court today, sitting in Twin Falls County for our third and final hearing in Twin Falls, and we welcome you. This case is entitled South Valley Groundwater District versus Idaho Department of Water Resources. In this matter, the appellants, Idaho Department of Water Resources, Gary Spackman, are represented by Michael Orr, who will be addressing us today, and Eric Baxter appears only. Also, on the appellant's side of the argument, W. Kent Fletcher will be arguing for Big Wood Canal Company and the Big Wood and Little Wood Water Users Association. Do I have that right? For respondents, we have several. For the Sun Valley Groundwater District, we have Albert Barker. For Galena Groundwater District, Heather O'Leary appearing only, but Mr. Barker to argue. We have Chris Bromley for respondent Sun Valley Company, Michael Lawrence for the respondent City of Haley. And let's see. Per 9-26-22 order, the City of Bellevue, City of Ketchum, and City of Pocatello are not participating today. Mr. Orr, I understand you'll argue first, followed by Mr. Fletcher, and any remaining time after the two of you argue will be for rebuttal. So you may proceed, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Idaho Supreme Court, may it please the Court, Michael Orr for the Idaho Department of Water Resources, and Gary Spackman in his official capacity as Director of the Department. I plan to use 20 minutes of my time for opening and reserve 5 for rebuttal. In this case, we ask this Court to affirm the District Court's conclusions that the Director had authority under Section 237AG to initiate the administrative proceedings in this case and was not required to apply the conjunctive management rules in that proceeding. And I'll refer to those as the CM rules or simply the rules. But we ask this Court to reverse the District Court's conclusion that Idaho's prior appropriation doctrine required the Director to make formal determinations of, quote, an area of common groundwater supply and, quote, material injury, as those terms are defined in the CM rules. And this case began in 2021 when an extreme drought took hold early in the White River Valley and grew worse as spring progressed. Water was short. Senior surface water users on Silver Creek and Littlewood didn't have enough water to irrigate their crops and were being curtailed early in the season, while upstream juniors in an area informally known as the Bellevue Triangle continued to pump groundwater from the aquifer that feeds Silver Creek and the Littlewood River. In fact, the prior appropriation doctrine was turned on its head. The Director has an affirmative statutory duty to see that water rights are administered in accordance with the prior appropriation doctrine, as this Court has recognized before. But this Court has also recognized that the details of how to discharge that duty are committed to the Director's discretion. And in this case, the Director initiated a proceeding under Section 237AG to determine whether the junior groundwater rights should be curtailed in order to protect the exercise of senior surface water rights. The District Court held that Section 237's AG's language authorized the Director to do this, and the language of that statute confirms this conclusion, and the statute is entirely discretionary. It states, in relevant part, that the Director, quote, in his sole discretion, is empowered to supervise and control the exercise of all rights to the use of groundwaters, and any exercise of this discretionary power may initiate administrative proceedings to prohibit or limit the withdrawal of water from any well during any period that he determines the water to fill any water right in said well is not there available. The statute provides that water is not available to fill a groundwater right when withdrawals from the well, quote, would affect, contrary to the declared policy of this Act, the present or future use of any prior surface or groundwater right. Now that language is plain and clear, as the District Court recognized, and it expressly authorized the Director to initiate administrative proceedings in this case. And as the District Court also concluded, nothing in Section 237AG or the CM rules require the Director to apply or defer to the rules in a Section 237 proceeding. And that is the end of the story on those issues. The court need not and should not go any further on those points and should affirm the district court. But this court should reverse the district court's conclusion that Idaho's prior appropriation doctrine required the director to make formal determinations of an area of common groundwater supply and material injury as defined in the CM rules. These conclusions are contrary to the plain language of the statute, and they're also contrary to this court's decisions. Section 237AG is itself a statutory component of Idaho's prior appropriation doctrine, and it provides the designation of an area...
Say that again.
I'm sorry. Section 237AG is itself a statutory component of Idaho's prior appropriation doctrine.
Statutory component of the prior appropriation doctrine?
Yes. As the district court itself recognized, Idaho's prior appropriation doctrine is defined by the Idaho Constitution, Idaho statutes, and the decisions of this court. So Section 237AG is a statutory component, if you will, of Idaho's prior appropriation doctrine. And under that language of that statute, designation of an area of common groundwater supply is entirely discretionary. The statute states that, quote, in connection with the director's supervision and control of the exercise of groundwater rights, and that supervision and control is itself expressly designated as a discretionary power in the statute, the director, quote, shall also have the power to determine what areas of the state have a common groundwater supply. This is permissive language, and it means the director is authorized, but not required, to make a formal determination of an area of common groundwater supply. Simply one of the tools at the director's discretion.
Why was there no determination of common groundwater supply in this case?
In this case, at least as the district court saw it, an area of common groundwater supply has to be determined under the CM rules, which requires another proceeding in and of itself, essentially. That would be very time-consuming. This case was a case where timely action was called for, very prompt action. Water was short, senior water right users were going without water, they were being curtailed, fields were drying up, they were having to secure supplemental water supplies, and the juniors were pumping water that would have flowed downstream to them, and they could have used. So prompt action was required.
Is that the intent of 42-237-AG is to provide a tool to the director to act promptly in emergency situations?
That is one of the purposes, Your Honor, yes. It provides the director with flexibility to respond in situations such as this where very prompt action is called for. Now, it also allows the director, it gives the director discretion to apply the provisions of the CM rules should he deem it necessary in a given situation, such as when it might be a larger aquifer, more complex hydraulic interconnections, and maybe not the immediate need for administration there was in this case. So it's intended to allow the director's discretion to go in either direction.
Is this the type of thing you'd expect to see the director use on an intra-basin crisis as opposed to an inter-basin crisis?
You mean between water districts or?
If it's within a discrete area as opposed to way upstream and way downstream, different basins perhaps?
Well, I think the statute provides the director authority to apply it in any of those situations. Now, whether he would use his discretion under the statute to apply components of the CM rules, like area of common groundwater supply and material injury, and bring those in, would probably depend on factors just such as what you're describing there, where the case gets more complex and perhaps involves factors that are not present here, such as senior storage water supplies, reasonable carryover, things of that nature that the rules address but aren't specifically addressed in Section 237AG. So I think it provides discretion to go in either direction.
And the common groundwater type study that you're suggesting would have been required under the conjunctive management rule, do we have any idea how long that would normally take? Does the record reflect that?
Well, the only thing I can refer to is how long it took to develop the CM goals where the ESPO was declared an area of common groundwater supply. And the procedures under the rules for designating new ones, as I read them, call for an entirely separate proceeding that could take days, weeks, months. It could entirely preclude in-season administration timely relief in a situation such as this where it's obviously required.
If you had a situation where a private party had initiated a delivery call at the same time that the director was exercising his 237 authority, could you end up with potentially incongruent results?
I don't think so, Your Honor. If a private party initiates a valid delivery call, in, say in Basin 37, in compliance with Rule 30's requirements, the director must respond to that under the CM rules. Now, if there was already a Section 237 proceeding underway, such as what you're talking about, I would envision that they would merge or be decided under very similar types of standards. I mean, we don't have the record to know, but I don't think the results would be in conflict, because both Section 237AG and the conjunctive management rules must comply with the principles of Idaho's prior appropriation doctrine. The principles of Idaho's prior appropriation doctrine defined, again, by the Constitution, the statutes, and the decisions of this court. The decisions of this court, in the conjunctive management cases, have held that the director does not need to administer to the entire area of groundwater supply. That's in the Clear Springs case and the Igwa case, which is 160 Idaho 119. In those cases, the court affirmed the director's authority to restrict curtailment to an area smaller than the ESP area of common groundwater supply based on his discretionary authority to apply a trim line. Igwa's holding, I would submit, is directly controlling in this case on the question of whether the director has to define and administer to an area of common groundwater supply. This court has already held he does not have to. And if you look at the Igwa case, on page 130, the same argument that is being advanced here, well, actually not argument, the district court said that the director must administer to all groundwater rights that have any effect on the surface source. That's on page 717 and 718 of the clerk's record. Page 130 of the Igwa decision, the Surface Water Coalition made exactly that argument, and this court rejected it. So to affirm the district court's holding on area of common groundwater supply in this case would put that decision in direct conflict with the Igwa case and arguably would effectively overrule it. Now, as a factual matter, the district court also erred in stating it was unknown how the boundaries of the curtailment area were derived. The final order in the agency record both explain this. The final order states that the boundaries of the curtailment area were based on the groundwater hydrology of the Wood River Basin, as determined by the technical memorandum that IDWR engineer Jennifer Succo prepared for the hearing. That's in the administrative record at page 1904. Now, Succo's memorandum is also in the agency record, and it provides a detailed explanation of how the boundaries of the curtailment area were determined. Specifically, the boundaries are simply the boundaries of the Wood River Valley groundwater flow model, adjusted to exclude areas that have minimal in-season impacts on flows in Silver Creek and the Littlewood River, as determined by curtailment simulations that Succo ran on the model. And as a result of these exclusions, the curtailment area accounts for 99% of the impacts of all consumptive groundwater uses in the Wood River Valley that they have on the surface flows in Silver Creek, even though the curtailment area includes only 70% of the consumptive groundwater uses within the entire model domain. Now, Succo's testimony at the hearing, and I'm referring to the transcript of June 7, 2021, also explains all this. It's pages 86 to 87, 132 to 139, 189, and 193 to 194. Now further, no one has argued that the director should not have limited curtailment to the area responsible for 99% of the cumulative groundwater impacts. No one has argued that the director was required to curtail all consumptive groundwater uses within the Wood River Valley, simply because they might also be within whatever the area of common groundwater supply would be defined as. And this court's decisions, again, Clear Springs and Igwa, make it clear the director did have authority to limit curtailment in that way. Now, the curtailment area also addressed the district court's due process concerns about providing notice to the world of potentially affected water right holders, and that juniors be curtailed in order of priority. The curtailment area itself define the world of groundwater right holders who are potentially subject to curtailment, and it's undisputed that all of those water right holders were notified of the proceeding and had opportunity to participate. And it also established the correct order of priority administration, because all those rights are decreed. We have decreed priorities. And all of the curtailed rights were junior in priority to senior surface water rights from Silver Creek and the Littlewood River that were short of water. Now, turning to material injury, the district court also erred as a matter of law in holding the director had to make a formal determination of material injury under the procedures and factors of the CM rules. Section 237AG does not require the director to determine material injury as that term is defined in the rules. Rather, the statute authorizes curtailment when groundwater withdrawals, quote, would affect the present or future use of any prior surface or groundwater right in a way, quote, contrary to the declared policy of the Groundwater Act. And that is the traditional policies of beneficial use in reasonable amounts and the rule that first in time is first in right as set forth in Section 42-226. That is the statutory standard for curtailment under Section 237, and that is the standard the director applied. The district court erred by essentially replacing that language with the material injury language of the CM rules. And contrary to the district court's conclusion, this was not required or justified by a single passage in the Clear Springs decision. Clear Springs did not involve a proceeding under Section 237AG. And in Clear Springs, this court was not called upon to resolve the issue in this case, which is whether the CM rules definition of material injury supersedes the plain language of Section 237AG. And finally, the outcome in Clear Springs would have been exactly the same if the court had simply quoted the language of Section 237AG rather than referring to, quote, material injury. So the material injury passage in Clear Springs is clearly dicta and did not justify ignoring the plain language of Section 237AG. And if it is not dicta, if this court sees it otherwise, then this court should disavow that passage in Clear Springs as contrary to law. This court has repeatedly held that courts may not replace or modify statutory language. So in sum, we ask this court to affirm the district court's holdings that the director has statutory authority to initiate administrative proceedings. And he was not required to administer according to the CM rules in that proceeding. But to reverse the district court's holding, that Idaho's prior appropriation doctrine nonetheless required the director to make formal determinations of, quote, an area of common groundwater supply and material injury pursuant to the procedures and standards of the CM rules.
Just as a curiosity, the process used by the director in this case, would there have been any mechanism or place for a junior user to make a futile call argument?
Yes, and those arguments were made, and they were addressed in the final order.
So that is available to them as a defense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's it.
Would you address their due process argument that the shortened time frame of this proceeding violated their due process rights? They didn't have a meaningful opportunity to respond.
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, I'll point out that this was addressed in Clear Springs v. SPAC, and there was a question of whether a hearing was required prior to taking property rights. And the court recognized that in some cases, very prompt action is required to protect water rights. You'll see I'm on page here, 815. Deprivation of water for a time it would take for a hearing may cause serious economic or other harm to the senior appropriator. But then later on in the decision, the court goes on to note that the groundwater pumping did not cause a sudden loss of discharge of water from the springs, and curtailment would not quickly restore the spring flows, and hence, in that case, very prompt action without a hearing was not required. In this case, groundwater pumping does cause a sudden loss of water from the springs. That's documented in the final order, supported by substantial evidence in the record. And curtailment would quickly restore the spring flows. That's also supported by the record. So under the clear spring standard, the director could have acted without a hearing at all. He could have simply ordered it, and there could have been a follow-up hearing in a challenge to that order. That being said, the director chose to have a hearing beforehand. And there was that's definitely satisfying due process. There was notice, opportunity to participate, pre-hearing motions, discovery, depositions, I think a six-day hearing. It was accelerated compared to what some of the parties were used to in the ESPA cases, which are far more complicated. This was not an ESPA case. Due process was satisfied.
How do you respond to the allegation that this discretion is being used by the director? Appears to have no guardrails. It appears to be unfettered. I know that argument was made, for example, by the municipal providers. How do you respond to that?
Well, abuse of discretion is, I think there's the three standards. The director must recognize it as a discretionary act within the outermost legal bounds defined and through an exercise of reason. Now, the director did, in his final order, recognize his discretionary authority to act. He did identify the statutory standards under Section 237 AG for identifying the water rights that should be subject to curtailment, the reasons for it, to find a curtailment area consistent with those statutory standards. And the final order, it's indisputably shows an exercise of reason.
I get that the concerns, though, of a lot of the interveners in this case is that even if it was applied within the outer bounds in this case, the nature of the ruling by the director suggests that there are no guardrails, that he could have gone further than he did, and that he might in a future case.
Your Honor, I don't think that the final order says that, not as I recall, that he's reserving some kind of other authority. The director was merely exercising his discretion in this case to take the action that he felt was necessary in this case to provide timely in-season relief to people who were actually being injured. In terms of whether the director might use this statute again, the statute's on the books. He has authority to use it in the right situation. It doesn't replace the CM rules in a conjunctive management call, obviously. The director has to reply to the rules in that case. But in a future proceeding where the statute applies, the language of the statute defines the bounds of the director's discretion. So I don't think that argument really carries the day, if you will.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
When you're ready.
Thank you. Chief Justice, Justices, and Counsel, I am Kent Fletcher. I represent the Bigwood Canal Company. Jerry Rigby, who represents the senior surface water users, couldn't be here today, so I'm arguing also on their behalf. Because of restrictions put on this proceeding by the director, many of the Bigwood Canal Company water rights were not involved. However, the senior surface water users that are involved divert primarily from the Littlewood River. The groundwater users, including the cities and Sun Valley, are upstream, and there is no issue that pumping from the groundwater affects surface water supplies, and that's what brings us here today. Because of the effects of post-World War II development of thousands of acres in the Bigwood Valley, IDWR created a groundwater management area back in 1991. Unfortunately, no plan was ever developed for that groundwater management area In 2021, seniors had not initiated a call, which is an important distinction in this case, but had been discussing issues with groundwater users. Those discussions were unfruitful, and the director decided to act under the Groundwater Act rather than any other available procedure in order to deal with the problems associated with the senior water rights. Bigwood and the senior surface water users support the director's order and respectfully disagree with some of the district court's holding, particularly those requiring application of conjunctive management rules to a Groundwater Act proceeding. And I just want to point out, if you want to look at the very same district court's decision in Basin 33, you can see why this decision is somewhat compounding. In that case, he found explicitly that the conjunctive management rules do not apply unless there's a call made. And in this case, there was no call. I would like to just emphasize a few points. I've been involved in the Surface Water Coalition water call since its inception. That matter is much more complicated than the issues in the Bigwood River. The ESPA call deals with millions of acres. It deals with significant differences in the timing of when groundwater comes back to the river. All of these facts were recognized by the director in his final order in this case when he elected to use a different procedure to administer water. In this case, the director elected to use a statutory procedure that resulted in a relatively prompt decision in order to avoid injury to senior water users. This court in AFRD 2 held that there should be no unnecessary delay in the delivery of water to a valid water right. The district court in the previous decision in Rangan held that a prompt administrative action to address a water supply deficiency should take place in the year in which it occurs. This court should uphold those standards. There was ample evidence of actual injury presented by several senior water users at the hearing. These are family farmers. Some are multi-generational. The director found that there were no viable defenses contradicting the evidence of actual injury, and he did address futile call, waste, all the other potential defenses. Much has been made of the material injury standard of the conjunctive management rules because of this court's statement in Clear Springs, which was a conjunctive management rule case. But even Rule 42, if the court looks at that rule, does not require the director to use the factors in Rule 42 when determining material injury. The rule says the director may consider the listed factors, but his consideration is not limited to those factors. The requirement that an injured party must show that injury is not fanciful, but that the injury is actually real, has long predated the conjunctive management rules. It dates back to at least 1944, when the Beecher decision was issued. That does not mean the director must apply the Rule 42 material injury factors in a proceeding under the Groundwater Act, especially since the conjunctive management rules don't even require that the director apply those factors. Finally, if this court were to adopt the district court's finding, the results would be catastrophic to water administration and the senior users in Basin 37. As a result of the director's actions, the groundwater users and surface water users are working cooperatively and were able to negotiate a 3-year groundwater management area plan. It expires after next year. If the groundwater community is told that the director must use conjunctive management principles to administer water under the Groundwater Management Act, it will lead to lengthy hearings and appeals resulting in years before the injury to the seniors is addressed. And if you want an example of that, just look at what's gone on in the ESPA. The call in the ESPA was made in 2005. After years of hearings and appeals and a real fear of curtailment, the parties finally reached agreement in 2015, 10 years later. If Idaho is serious about administering its water and protecting senior users from injury, it must rely upon the experience and expertise of the director and IDWR to perform their statutory duties in an efficient manner.
To that point then, on the experience and the expertise, what did IDWR already know about the hydrological impact of pumping in the Bellevue Triangle that wouldn't have been enhanced by conducting some kind of a groundwater survey over a little longer period of time?
Okay, when you talk about the timing, I think the timing, the problem is this action's initiated and the director is trying to prevent injury in 2021. Are you asking, could the department at some point prior have conducted some type of...
No, not at all. I want to know if they were acting blind or if they had data that they could make a reasoned decision that we can't look at and say that wasn't a reasoned use of their...
Yeah, if the record has in there the staff memos that talk about what... the information, the data the department had and it relied upon, including the development of a model which talks about how water supplies affect, groundwater supplies affect surface water. So the department had developed data and the director relied upon that, and he required department staff to actually prepare written memos concerning that data so that all the parties could examine that data. And all of those people were deposed and were witnesses at the time of the hearing.
So then explain that, go one step further and explain the difference between evidence of impact, that is that junior groundwater pumping is impacting the senior right, that evidence, and explain what a common groundwater determination is. How are they different?
Well, area of common groundwater supply is a term of art under the conjunctive management rules. And if one looks at the conjunctive management rules, there's an entire procedure that the department has to go through to determine an area of common groundwater supply. Someone, either a patron would have to ask for that through a petition, or the department could initiate that on its own volition. But that would also lead to a series of hearings and potential appeals and whatever else before you could ever get around to administering water. And I think that director, in this case, I can't think for him, but I assume he made the determination that they didn't have time to do that and still avoid injury to the senior users.
Very well.
For all of those reasons, the Bigwood Canal Company and senior surface water users request that the court uphold the director's order and, to the extent necessary, reverse the district court decision. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I understand, Mr. Barker, you'll argue first, followed by Mr. Lawrence and Mr. Fowler.
That's correct, Your Honor. Albert Barker, on behalf of the South Valley Groundwater District, we're also arguing on behalf of the Galena Groundwater District. May it please the court, the Honorable Justices. What we've got here is a case of unadulterated conjunctive administration. That's what we were doing. That's what we have. This is an attempt to figure out the relationship between surface and groundwater. That's what conjunctive management is, conjunctive administration is, and that's what the director was supposed to have been doing in this case. And in fact, when you go to the very beginning, the pre-hearing conference in this case, and you look at what was said at the pre-hearing conference, the director said, in response to a question, what's the difference between injury that you're looking at in this case and material injury under the conjunctive management rules? And he said, I don't know that there is a difference. And yet now, counsel for the director claims that there is a difference. So what is that difference? If you look at the language of the statute, does it affect? You look at the definition of material injury in the conjunctive management rules. Is it an attempt to figure out what impact? So affect, impact. Do those mean different things? When this 237 AG was written 70 years ago, and the conjunctive management rules were written in 1994. The fact is, the director said, I'm going to use material injury, and I'm going to use the guidelines in Rule 42 as a guideline for the decisions in this case. And then he did neither. He did neither thing. He said, I'm going to do it. So, Justice, on to your question about due process. How can you possibly have due process when you have a director of an agency saying, this is how it's going to work, and then when you get a decision at the very end, it discards the very guidelines and the very standards that he says he's going to use. So why is material injury important? Material injury goes back into the priority doctrine, into the Constitution of the state of Idaho, all the way back to the Borman case 100 years ago, where the court said when you're going to have an injunction against groundwater use, there has to be material injury. That material injury language has been in the United States, or the state of Idaho, for 100 years. Now, apparently, we can ignore material injury and say, well, effect, whatever that means. And we don't know what that means.
Counsel, I can understand your argument that perhaps certain rules weren't followed or perhaps the statute wasn't followed. Help me understand how an order by the department's director curtailing junior water right users constitutes a violation of the prior appropriation doctrine, which means first in time is first in right. Who was first in time that didn't get their rights? Like, that would suggest to me a prior appropriation doctrine violation.
So, Your Honor, the decisions of this court say, and as senior water users, and maybe even the director doesn't want to hear this, but priority in time is not the only part of the prior appropriation doctrine. There is this concept of beneficial use that has to be evaluated. Optimum development, all of those issues have to be merged together. And in this case...
I think that's fair. So I just want to be clear then. Are you claiming that any senior water right holders lost their priority as a result of the department's direction, or is it some other kind of injury?
I'm sorry, that they lost their priority because of the action of the director?
Yes.
The seniors did?
Yes. Did any senior right holders get curtailed in violation of that part of the prior appropriation document?
So that required, so I'm going to give you a long answer to that question if you don't mind. So what happened in this case was, so you need to understand the aquifer here. This is not a river. This court has said many times that you don't administer surface and groundwater the same way you administer surface to surface. And so this is not a river. While it's different than the ESPA, it's still not this instantaneous reaction. What the model showed that the department relied upon was that there was some reaction, but that two-thirds of the water that would be curtailed remained in the aquifer and would leave during the non-irrigation season. So it would be available for no one. And so what they did was they looked at the model and said, okay, we've got so many acre feet or so many CFS that would accrue to the Littlewood as a result of the 100% curtailment of every water user in the Bellevue Triangle. And the court said, or the model said, that of that, a certain amount would accrue, and then 25 to 30% of that would be lost before it gets to the seniors. And so the water master took that information and concluded that of the water that would accrue, there were three water rights of the seniors who were making a demand that had a chance of getting water based upon the model information. And so, yes, there was a potential for injury to those three. But what the director did not do when he evaluated the potential injury, he did not evaluate how much water was needed. He did not evaluate reasonable in-season demand. He did not evaluate how many acres were being used by the individuals or being irrigated that year. And every one of them was using less acres than the water right allowed.
So are you suggesting then that this should have been a futile call? Or are you suggesting the director used a hammer when he should have been using a scalpel?
Yes and yes. So the futile call piece of it comes to, there were a number of, there were a few other people in the case. So remember, you have had 10 senior users who asked to participate in this case. You had 5 who testified. You had 3 who had rights that would have been able to be filled in the event of a 100% curtailment. And so of the ones that had no chance of getting water, that's futile. And the only evidence in the case is the testimony of the water master based upon the model that these three users would get potentially get water. But then when you look at, well, what did they need? We also know that these users didn't Some of them had supplemental water rights. One of them had a supplemental well that all have to be used. So there's not the kind of material injury determination that you would typically go through. There's no reason that the director could not have used the material injury standards in evaluating the evidence that was put in front of him. But he didn't, even though he said he was going to. So had he done that, we might have a different situation. So what happened is the junior groundwater user said, okay, director, because of the ability under the conjunctive management rules to ask for a mitigation plan, we provided a proposal that said, of those three water users, here we'll supply water. The director then said, no, I deny it without a hearing. And the reason for this is really critical in this case, because he said, you are not supplying water for the depletion to the source that other people might be able to take water. These other people who might be able to take water didn't show up at the hearing, didn't provide any evidence of what their needs are, didn't provide any evidence whether they were irrigating or not. This was a terrible drought year. Some people didn't plant. So what the director did was to say, essentially, the only thing that matters is your rights are junior. The senior rights might be able to get some water, but I don't have to evaluate it because I know that if water gets into the creek, somebody will be able to take it. But that's not the way you do administration in this state. That's the problem with this proceeding. What not only was it extremely truncated and on the due process side, we have the department making a decision in March, that they were going to do an evaluation. And they sent their modelers and their people out there to gather information, and they took 2 months to provide a report, and then we had 2 weeks to evaluate them. And our experts didn't have a chance to really dig into the same extent that the departments had. But the important piece of it is that there was no real evaluation of injury. People stand up there and say, oh, we're injured because we're not getting water. But in fact, the injury has to be resulting from the pumping by the groundwater users.
Wasn't one of the purposes, though, for the director's action was to prevent injury, not try to measure injury after the fact? How could he have measured injury in May?
The same way he measured it at the hearing. He used his model to project, right? You could say, well, here's the flows, here's what's going to happen. He could have started this in March. He could have started this in February. And the other thing, you asked about when could we have done something about the area of common groundwater supply? This is going to take forever. Oh, my God, we can't do anything. But, in fact, let me back up one more step. In 2013, when the groundwater rights were brought into Water District 37, the director's order says that we are going to use conjunctive management rules in order to conjunctively administer between surface and groundwater. So it's not a big deal for you to bring these into the water district, because the water master is not going to make those decisions. It's going to be handled through the conjunctive management rules. So why can the director say we're going to manage these water rights through the conjunctive management rules and then turn around and say, never mind, I've got this other thing that I've just discovered that's 70 years old that's no one ever used before, after I've already affirmatively told all of the water users in the basin that we're going to use the conjunctive management rules.
Do you think that's a violation of the sole discretion that he has under 42-237?
I think that's certainly a violation. It's an abuse of discretion for him to say one thing, and he said it many times. He said it in 2013, we're going to use the conjunctive management rules. He said it in the beginning of this case, that we are going to use material injury and we're going to follow the guidelines of the rules. That, and then to not do it, that is the abuse of discretion. So the other thing about the area of common groundwater supply I want to address is that the delivery call was made in 2014. And the director said, well, I'm going to administer this delivery call under Rule 40. And he started to go off and do a bunch of investigation. So Valley Company appealed that decision, and Judge Wildman said, you cannot use Rule 40. You have to use Rule 30 because you haven't developed an area of common groundwater supply. And Rule 40 is for when there is an area of common groundwater supply, and Rule 30 is when they're not, and there's a provision in Rule 31 that says how you go about making the determination. So Judge Wildman remanded the case to the director. So what did the director do? This is in 2015, 6 years before this proceeding. What did he do about finding an area of common groundwater supply? According to Mr. Orr, he's got the discretion to do that under 237 AG, but he didn't do it. He didn't try to convert the proceeding to a Rule 30 proceeding and ask the callers to put together the information necessary under Rule 30, and nor did the callers do anything about that. So what you have is the director being told it's important. If we're going to use the conjunctive management, if we're going to have a conjunctive administration, to come up with this area of common groundwater supply. And why that's important is, in the Sun Valley decision, Judge Wildman makes it clear that nobody argues that there is an area of common groundwater supply. Nobody argues that the groundwater in the triangle or above in the Big Wood was the same as the groundwater area in the Basin 37. It's different. And if you look at the model, the model's boundaries are different from the boundaries of the groundwater management area. They're different from the boundaries of the water district. So how do you know what it is that is the area of common groundwater supply when you've got all these different competing technical or administrative determinations? So the way you sort that out is through an area of common groundwater supply. That could have been done in 2015, and it wasn't. It could have been done as part of this proceeding as well. If in fact, you listen to the department saying, well, we've got enough information to know what the area is, really, why couldn't he have made that determination as part of his 237 AG decision or a conjunctive management decision under the conjunctive management rules? He could have done that, and he did not.
I'm still not sure I understand why the common groundwater supply determination is so vital here. And what I'm getting at is, if we determine that there's substantial and competent evidence in the record that supports the determination that junior groundwater pumping is impacting senior surface rights, then why does it matter that there's no common groundwater supply determination?
Well, Your Honor, because you haven't determined what groundwater rights are the ones who are having an effect. You haven't determined whether or not this is a proper curtailment if you don't know what the area of common groundwater supply is.
Isn't that what the department is saying its modeling did?
That's exactly what the department is saying, Justice Sonnen, but they they don't know, they're not telling you that the model is an area of common groundwater supply. And if you look at the boundaries of the model, it's very limited. It does not include tributaries to the Big Wood, for example. It is focused on just the area of around the Big Wood and Silver Creek. And so you don't know what effect the areas outside that model boundary have.
But isn't that a defense you could present in this administrative hearing? That your modeling is flawed, is what I hear you saying.
Well, Your Honor, we did argue that the modeling was flawed, and the director's response was, well, it's the best tool I got. So it's one of those situations where if the only tool you got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
But why isn't that the best evidence available? I mean, this methodology may be flawed, but if it's the best that's available, why isn't that the best evidence?
It's the best evidence, Justice Stegner, it's the best evidence that the area that they've chosen, what those effects are. But it's not the best evidence that there are other areas that have not been chosen that may have an effect.
So let me ask you then about a comment that the first attorney for the appellants made. He said that the junior users here were responsible for 99% of the cumulative groundwater impact. Do you challenge that statement factually?
Well, Your Honor, that's what the department's modeler determined based upon use of this model, which, as I said, is constrained. And so the other thing that...
So you challenge that then as being factually incorrect?
Within the boundaries of the model that was used, we don't challenge that. We don't have evidence to say that that was wrong.
So it's more of a methodology issue then?
We have concerns, significant concerns about the model itself, and the model is acknowledged as being in complete or in need of significant improvement. For example, there's no information about groundwater pumping at all in the model. Nothing. It's all done by evapotranspiration, and in the valley, you've got most of the groundwater wells are supplemental, so it's a very hard thing to separate out what is the difference between supplement water supplied by supplemental irrigation and water supplied by the surface water rights. So we believe that the model is flawed, but you're right, Justice Stegner, we don't have evidence to say what else is there. So the question is this a rush to judgment when the department had tools? And this court has said many times that the conjunctive management rules give the director the tools that the director needs to conjunctively administer surface and groundwater rights. And so now the director has said, well, I've got this model, it's good enough, or it's close enough, and so therefore I'm going to ignore the rest of the tools in the conjunctive management rules.
Well, that's not the only reason he acted under the statute, is it? I mean, I heard Mr. Orr say this was an urgent situation. It needed to be dealt with in the same year. We didn't have time to go out and have a whole other proceeding to determine the common groundwater supply. So, I mean, this is somewhat unique given the urgency, and my understanding is there's substantial and competent evidence, at least the appellants are arguing, in the record to support that determination that this was urgent. He needed to deal with it now.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, 2021 was urgent everywhere in the state. There's nothing unique about the Big Wood in that water year. There was a horrible drought everywhere. You know, did the director decide you needed to do this anywhere other than the Big Wood? No, we don't know why he picked the Big Wood, other than that the court told him that he had not properly done his conjunctive administration in 2015. So...
But the fact he didn't do it everywhere doesn't deprive him of the statutory authority to do it here, does it?
It does not deprive him of the statutory authority, but the statutory authority under 237 AG carries with it the responsibility to conjunctively administer. And what does that mean? That means to use the conjunctive management rules. Not simply, I found an effect. And the problem what we've got with this effect argument is that it's really founded on a determination by the director that this, see if I can find the quote, this is a... depletion of the source that some senior water right holders might be able to take their water from. So if we are now in an era where the director can say, look, I don't need to find out who might be able to use the water. I can curtail anybody who's junior because water might get to a senior. We have just thrown out the conjunctive management rules.
And I understand that, but that's a material injury argument. We were talking about the need to develop or determine the common groundwater supply. I see those as two different attacks you're making here.
Well, first of all, we're asking the court to uphold the decision by the district court, so we're not attacking that decision that it was necessary. But
in your petition for judicial review, you were attacking both of those.
I'm sorry?
When you challenged the director's decision, you were challenging both of those issues.
That's correct.
And others, but...
That's correct. And so the area of common groundwater supply is the impact on the juniors. The material injury question is the impact on the seniors, right?
Right.
Which juniors are going to be affected? Which seniors are going to be affected, and how? And you can't really make either one of those determinations without looking at the guidelines of the conjunctive management rules. And again, there was no reason that couldn't have been done in this proceeding. Just because Mr. Orr says, well, this is going to take a long time, or just because Mr. Fletcher says it's taking a long time in the SBA. We've all said this is a different system, right?
But what kind of evidence would have been in the record, would be in the record today if there had been a common groundwater supply determination versus the director's determination that there's an impact of junior groundwater pumping on surface rights? As a practical matter, what else would we have?
You would have to have a determination under Rule 31 of where the recharge happens, what impacts of the groundwater of pumping would have on surface water supplies. And we don't have any evidence of what, in the record here, of what other impacts there might be on the surface water supply, other than the conclusion that, well, this area in the Belgian Triangle is all that you can, all that we're going to look at. Because remember, this decision was made up front. This decision that says this area of the Belgian Triangle, the director said, I'm not going to take any evidence outside that area. The only thing I'm going to listen to is what the effect of the pumping within that area is. And he drew the line before we had the hearing. He didn't wait and have the hearing and make a determination. He said, I'm prejudging this area of common groundwater supply or whatever the area that's going to be affected before we even start the case.
But what I understood Justice Brody's question to get to is you had a very truncated process, how you described it before. And is there new evidence or is there anything that has transpired in the interim that would suggest that with the benefit of looking backwards that we think this model is defective?
Well, Your Honor, stepping outside the administrative record, I would say yes. We do know that, and the department has admitted, that the evapotranspiration model that it uses vastly overstates use. We know that. That's not in the record because that didn't happen until recently, and it's, the department is also in the process of evaluating its trying to redo the model. And the other thing is they're going to add in the pumping records that were not in the model before. And the other thing that they're looking at doing is I forgot the third thing. But the fact is that the model is being reevaluated. And one other thing that's important, comparing this case with the Clear Springs and the Igloo cases, there was a 10% modeling error in those cases, right? Well, here we had an admission of a 22% modeling error in this case, and evidence that 22%, which was modeled over a 10-month period, would have been substantially more, two or three times more, over a 3-month period, which was the model was run. Nobody had that information. We didn't have time to figure out what that model error would be. So we have a model with very high error rates for the water that's being diverted in the Bellevue Triangle area.
When we look at how the director utilized his discretion in this case, is it fair for us to look at the totality of what his actions were? Because this was a curtailment that didn't last the whole season. It lasted for 8 days. Now, I grew up in farm ground country, and I know that 8 days in the heat of summer can feel like 100 days. I understand that. But this was a curtailment not for the whole season. It lasted for 8 days until a mediated settlement could be reached. It seems to me that the alternative to that would have been, even by your own admission, that these seniorite water holders would not have gotten water for their entire season. If you weigh the possible outcome and the actual outcome, help me understand why the decision looks that bad in hindsight.
Mr. Chief Justice, may I?
You may, sir. You're out of time for the response, but you may answer the question, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's a lot of meat to that question, Justice Miller. So let me first say that the short-term settlement that was entered into after 8 days, the groundwater users felt like they had a gun to their head, all right? Because if they didn't agree, they were going to be completely shut off. And so I don't think that's fair to say that we would have come to the same conclusion without the director's order. I think it's pretty fair to say that it wouldn't. And as far as the seniors not getting water, the groundwater districts proposed a water a mitigation plan that would supply wet water through rentals and other means, and the director turned that down without hearing. And so there was a proposal out there that would have provided the seniors who the evidence showed would have been injured with the water that they would be entitled to. And the director said, I'm not interested, denied without a hearing. So I don't think it's fair to say they would not have received water in the absence of in the totality of the circumstances.
Sir, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your fellow litigators are not going to be able to address the court for at least the full 30 minutes.
I'm sure they'll take it out on you.
Buying lunch?
Madam Clerk, here's 1 minute for the appellant.
Yes,
Store, are you taking 1 minute?
Thank you, Your Honor.
There's a question, I believe. What is the difference between an adverse effect under Section 237AG and material injury under the conjunctive management rules? Both standards are rooted in this court's cases, which, as Mr. Fletcher pointed out, prohibit curtailment unless the senior's injury is, quote, material and actual substantial, as opposed to fanciful, theoretical, or merely possible. And that goes back long before 1944. It's a Navy Stoner, 53 Idaho 651. Bauer v. Moorman, 27 Idaho 162. Boise Development Company, 24 Idaho 36. And the Beecher case, Mr. Fletcher referenced, is 66 Idaho 1. The difference is that Section 237AG gives the director more flexibility in responding under these standards. And that allows him to respond quickly when necessary to protect senior water rights. And that also goes to your question, Justice Mueller, about guidelines or guardrails. These principles in this court's cases, the ones I just referenced, and in the Clear Springs legal cases.
I'm sorry, but the time is up. I'm special.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
With that, counsel, thank you to you. We appreciate all the fine work done. It's a managerial advisement and decision in due course. Now we need
all rise.